Good evening. This is KGVM 95.9 on your dial. This is the Meditation to Self-Realization program every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. I'm Jim.
And I'm Marion.
And tonight we are going to have some discussion and some
meditation and a little excerpt about meditation
and the way it's done through ECOM. Probably do some readings and discuss that.
Okay.
From the Four Sacred Secrets. You want to do that tonight?
I think that might be a good idea.
All right.
We haven't visited the Four Sacred Secret books in a while.
Well, we'll find out what we're going to discuss tonight.
Okay,
so let's get started.
And we'll do a little bit of a meditation. Just a short pause so that we can slow our minds down and our bodies and become connected. So if you're not driving, you can close your eyes. If you're driving, you can focus on conscious breathing. Take a deep inhale and allow your exhale to be twice as long as your inhale. And focus on this breath. Make sure you're sitting up straight and relax your face. Relax your tongue. Make sure it's down off the palate of your mouth. Relax your jaw. Now relax your shoulders. Please close your lips as you breathe in and slowly breathe out. Feel your chest rise as you breathe in and feel your chest fall as you breathe out. Let's hold our attention on our breath for 3 breaths. If your mind wanders, gently bring it back to the breath. Feel your body relaxed and feel your mind relax. And be in the present moment with us. Thank you. When you're ready, you can open your eyes.
Oh, thanks, Marion.
Yeah. It's nice to slow down.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice to slow down. The we're going to listen to about 4 minutes of, or 3.5 minutes of Priti G. She's going to explain why and when we meditate and a form of meditation.
And for those of you maybe joining us for the first time or if you don't remember, Sri Pritaji is a spiritual teacher and a philosopher and speaks of the universal intelligence. She's a mystic who drinks from the divine waters frequently as she leads people to a higher consciousness.
And one of the ways that you've been successful is through the meditation, because they do a kind of a triad, a triangular, where you cover not only breathing, but the mind and consciousness. And so...
And they do have a breathing app, a meditation app called the breathing room. Breathing app.
Mm-hmm. So... Anyway, let's listen to what she has to say about meditating. It's a little different. Really, I think personally for me, it makes me more aware
of why we meditate.
Exactly. Here we go.
Meditation is not a fad or a fashion. It is an ancient science that was cultivated in India for thousands of years. While the West cultivated prayer for centuries, in India, millions of people dedicated their entire lives to the study and the pursuit of meditation and consciousness. Take the terracotta seals found in the Indus Valley civilization. These seals are nearly 7,000 years old or even older. They showcase yogis in proper meditation postures. While people may pursue meditation for numerous reasons, to us, it is a path to move away from stressful states of mind to beautiful states of being. The meditations that Krishnaji and I teach are easy and powerful. They are also scientific and spiritual and yogic and universal. While there may be many bases for meditation, our meditations are built on what we call the transformation triad of breath, mind, and consciousness. Let me give you a simple understanding of the transformation triad. Our meditations built on transformation triad take you beyond helplessness to calm, clarity, and connection, to health, vigor, and vitality. Most meditations out there only use one or two of these three elements. We use an approach that integrates all three. Each of the three can act as a tool to shift the other two elements. Let us say you're experiencing angry thoughts and are not able to free yourself using the mind itself. Working your way through breath could be a path. This is breath impacting the mind. So you may start with breath-based practices. Let us say you're gripped by anxiety. Your breath will be erratic and short. And the more your breath is out of harmony, your anxiety would go out of chance. As you move into a meditative observation of your anxiety, you would notice your breath become easy, slow, and even. Your entire body moves away from stress to deep relaxation. This is mind impacting your breath and your body. If you're open to it, you may begin with observation-based practices. By the same token, when your consciousness transforms and you experience a beautiful state of connection beyond your limited self, the arising of anger, the arising of fear or sadness itself is minimized. This is consciousness impacting the mind. Here is something I want you to remember. Relax your body through meditation. It heals. Observe your mind in meditation. It calms. Awaken to an experience of connection beyond the self in consciousness. You become liberated. If you're still looking for a reason to meditate, let me tell you this. Meditation impacts us physically, chemically, neurologically, and emotionally. And by the
way. Okay, so Preeta G had some wisdom to share with us there in regards to meditation. And that's why we're doing this program, because we know how much it's affected our lives.
Yeah, and as we get to doing a lot, there's a lot of variations of the meditation on the breathing room app that we really enjoy, mostly because a lot of them will take you through little processes and going through this triad, especially when you become aware and observe and witness while you're meditating. It really does open one up to some of the inner stuff that we go through, like our inner child work, and becomes clearer.
And even our relationship issues, we can go there very easily. It broadens our perspective. And even if we come up with a disagreement about something in our lives that affects both of us, we can get a wider perspective because our consciousness opens to what the other person is feeling while they're explaining their perspective. It's not geared just about us and or oneself personally. We more easily step out of the self-obsession of only thinking about what we need in the relationship rather than taking into consideration what the other needs.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that you're making, because I know when we get into a disagreement with each other, all of a sudden we can plug into that egoic mind, you know, of self. And it takes that, and that part of the mind really takes us into communication that doesn't work.
Yes, very difficult messages, I would.
But say, by constantly doing meditation on a daily basis, and not just once a day, but maybe 2-3 times a day, to calm the mind, like Prithiji was saying in this little dissertation she just gave, is really worthwhile, because it gets you into that state of being where you're recognizing where you're at. If you're in the egoic mind, or if you're tense or angry, or anxiety is happening, and it makes it easier to calm yourself down, or the other person that you're in a disagreement. We're fortunate because both of us as a couple are doing the meditations and the processes, and so we can recognize when we're out of whack and bring it back into a more calm state.
Right, we come more in alignment with our center easier. I won't say it's perfect by any means.
No, not by any means.
But it doesn't go on for an hour or even a half hour most of the time.
Or even for days. There's no grudge. We're not holding on to a grudge or trying to win what people call argument or disagreement. You know, we're being defensive. We can really...
We're not building walls.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to connect and have a meaningful outcome for whatever the circumstances are that we're in disagreement about. So one of the things that I thought we could do is read from the Four Sacred Secrets by Prithiji and Krishnaji.
Well, prior to us starting this, we touched on the story about Gandhi. And that's a nice story, because he had to go through several possibilities how he could have reacted. Do you want to discuss that story a bit?
Well, we could.
I don't know if anybody's ever seen the movie Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, but he started out as a lawyer, and he went... So he got his lawyer degree, and he went to South Africa to try and become a successful lawyer. And on his way down there, he bought a first-class ticket on the train. And when the conductor came by, he called him names. He was real, kind of, I guess you would call a bigot, you know. You're a coolie, you're a darkie, you know, you belong in the third class. And Gandhi says, no, I have a first class ticket. I bought it, I paid for it. Well, unfortunately, this conductor made a big scene, took him off the train, got him off the train, and set him on a platform in this cold town at the train station. And while Gandhi was there, he's mulling in his head different possibilities that he could have done. And what he ended up doing was go inside of himself.
He looked for his inner truth,
mm-hmm,
of what he was actually feeling, that upset stomach, the pain in his stomach, the shame. And, you know, it really went to his core. He didn't just get angry at the conductor. He looked within himself for the experience of transformation. And I don't think he did it consciously or...
Well, but he went there.
He went there.
I think the point I wanted to make, and that I think why I wanted to bring this story up, and if you ever see the movie, it's in the movie. And the reason I brought that up is because I recognize now that where we've come from in our disagreements and whatnot with each other, and where we're at now, and it's similar to Gandhi, where all of a sudden, through all the meditations we have done and processes we've done, we're able to quickly go into our inner being, our inner self, and see where it is that and feel that somatic stomach or shortness of breath, and take that into our feelings, and then where we're at and maybe where it came from, so that we're looking within ourselves and not being, it helps us not be defensive. I notice for myself, if I don't do that, then I get very defensive.
Or we point the finger that the other person is to blame for our anxiety, which is never true.
Never true.
And so because we realize that, we don't have to go to those places anymore. We might visit it momentarily. It's so much easier to catch ourselves now.
And it is fascinating. Outside of just our relationship, when I'm out in the world, I can see how certain things will affect me in a subtle way, and how I have to really look at myself. Am I judging? Am I, you know, where's blaming? What am I doing? And it's nice to just take a pause during that process, you know, feeling the subtle energy. I know I was out recently with my partners, you know, and I really had to. I remember one point during our time together where I had to just kind of stop and pause and recognize where I was at. So I wasn't laying judgment out there.
Right, with the uncomfortability maybe that you felt.
Right. They were good. I'm glad you said that, because I got stuck.
Well, I believe that's the point that we're getting at, is to bring attention to the unrest or suffering states that we go through, whether it is anger, in Gandhi's place, his shame, and sometimes it's frustration or anxiety, whatever is bringing suffering up, we can, by noticing it, by feeling it, allowing ourselves to feel it, we can connect and dissolve it, not by talking ourselves out of it, but by allowing it to by bringing our attention to it and going underneath it and looking at where does this stem from? Where did I first feel this? And oftentimes it goes back to our childhood, or it might be something fresh from our teenage years or early adult years. In any event, it's the mystery. And we delve in, and once we recognize it, it dissolves the issue, and one's not self-obsessing in their pain and blaming someone else for it.
Yeah, and now that you mentioned the word pain, I'd like that the rest of the story is how Gandhi felt compassion for other people that were in that same boat. So when we start talking about prejudice or, you know, racial whatever,
unrest
that's going on, rather than constantly blame somebody for the racism or whatever,
or political beliefs.
Political beliefs, whatever you want, however you want to look at it.
Gender
differences, whatever it is. He went to compassion. And then he felt the pain and the suffering of other people. And it's just like when we get in a disagreement now, or if I'm even out in the world and there's something going on between me and somebody else, it's really nice to feel their pain, their suffering. And now you connect to the heart. And then the heart connects to the mind.
Or it at least integrates heart and mind.
And then consciously you become aware of what's going on around you, what's going on in you, and also how to better relate to the other individual or individuals that you're relating to in a compassionate way. Next thing you know, there is no racism or prejudice, or it's different. You know,
right. It does take excavating where our thinking leads us. And it does take that inner journey.
Yeah.
It takes the inner journey. And back to the four sacred secrets, the second secret, the first secret is to have a spiritual vision, which we've spoken about in earlier programs and read some from the book. And today, we're going to look at the second sacred secret, which is discovering one's inner truth. Discover your inner truth. And so I would like to read.
Sure. And if you get tired of reading, I can pick it up too.
Okay. We won't read too long, but there's a very interesting story in this secret, the second secret. So inner truth is a light in the dark. This is taken from page 56 in the Four Sacred Secrets by Preetiji and Krishnaji. Inner truth is not a confession you make to another. It is not a policy of honest speech. It is much deeper and more powerful. Inner truth is an awareness, and more than awareness. It is non-judgmental observation of what is happening within you while you ponder two deep insights about suffering. The first insight is that there are only two states of being in which you can ever be at in any given moment of time. you are either in a suffering state or a beautiful state. There is no third state. So the second insight is that all suffering states perpetuate themselves in self-obsession. So let's think of like anxiety or anger, frustration. You can see that all those intense feelings that make us suffer, they are rooted in self-obsession. And it's easy for me to see that. I guess that's my self-realization.
You know, when we get in those suffering states too, you really realize how it limits your consciousness. You know, it's a very limiting state, and if you dwell in it, oh my God, you really get stuck in the mud.
Well, you get stuck in the repetitive thought mm-hmm. of what it is that's making you angry, and you don't go any further. You just keep repeating, well, why did he do that? And why did he say that? That's not fair.
Right.
It's not even true. How dare he? Ta-da.
Blah, I think blah, she's blah. Talking about me.
An example of maybe how I used to think and respond.
All right.
Back to the book.
I don't think I should have said right.
It's all right.
I'm not putting her in a box.
No, I'm free.
There we go. I love that.
Let us share a simple story about how one of the students from O&O Academy began her journey into her truth. In most of our lives, our brush with inner truth may not be as historic as Gandhi's, Mahatma Gandhi. And Mahatma means the great soul of Gandhi. Nevertheless, every aspect of our lives acquires the touch of the extraordinary when we live in alignment with the second sacred secret. Two women, Christina and Lee, were having dinner when the subject of suffering came up. Suffering is a choice, said Christina, a businesswoman who had overcome many challenges in her life. When Lee, a community leader who had spent her entire career advocating for the poor, heard that, she spoke up. That's all well and good for you to say, sitting in an air-conditioned room with rich people smelling of perfumes. Christina was so humiliated, she left the room. When I found her later that evening on campus, she seemed much better, so I asked her what had changed. I understand Lee and the work she does, she said. When I understood her, my suffering went away. I feel better. You had that realization today, Christina, I said. Although what if someone this evening gave you hardcore evidence that Lee is in fact an arrogant person? How would you feel then? Angry and bitter again? What would happen to you? Your freedom cannot come from understanding someone else. It has to come from your own inner truth. It has to begin with recognizing the state you moved into when you felt disturbed by her. So what was the exact state you moved into when you walked out of the dining hall? I was in a suffering state. Initially, I felt humiliated and shocked. It slowly turned into anger, she said. If you observe yourself in those states even closer, what was your thought process in those moments? Christina took a few minutes before she replied, I was upset that I was the one who had supported her financially when her daughter fell sick a couple of months ago. How dare she insult me this way in front of everyone? She has taken total advantage of my goodness. How ungrateful of her. It is a fitting lesson for me to be careful with people and not take them at face value. Could you pause for a moment, Christina, and observe that? Whether you felt insult, shock, or anger, your stressful state perpetuated itself because of self-obsession. If you can see the truth of your self-obsession in that moment of suffering, there is a natural disentanglement from your suffering. That was the beginning of Christina's journey into inner truth. There is nothing inherently wrong with trying to understand another's perspective, though it is not the same as inner truth. And I think that's what we have found for ourselves.
Yeah, we were just discussing that.
Right. Is that the mind will help us figure out and talk us out of maybe being angry at someone. Only it doesn't last. It only lasts if we find our inner truth about what has made us angry.
This, it's like saying, can I just interrupt for a second? It's the same as saying what triggers you and why does it trigger you? Because it might be something from the past, the way you were raised, or what happened, some traumatic thing that might have happened in the past. So that triggers the key word. But then, and that gets you, once you recognize, well, this is triggering me, then you can go to what is it that is triggering you. And that takes you into your inner
core
awareness, your inner core. Then it's about you and not the other person.
True. Yeah. And that's really where the difference lies. So this is a major distinction between many self-help practices and the sacred secret of inner truth. When you feel a disturbance arise, it's not effective to try to change a thing. We don't want to justify it by giving explanations, and don't condemn it. Resist the temptation to try to come up with reasons outside of yourself. Simply realize that your inner state is being fueled by habitually obsessing over yourself. You are not trying to solve an actual problem at hand by going over the issue again and again in suffering states. Or, like I like to say, being in the hamster cage. You are merely obsessing over yourself. And when you catch yourself doing this time and again, the power of truth will begin to act upon you. Your life will open up to even greater synchronicities. Truth is not about changing your emotions. The inner world is strange and does not bow down to aggression. You cannot beat your anxiety or loneliness through aggression or trickery. All you can do is observe whatever is arising passively. Your very process of observation will break the current of suffering states. Stressful states will dissolve, and beautiful calm or joy will emerge and take their place. All you need to do is witness your state instead of fighting, manipulating, or maneuvering. So try to hold on to the good emotions when they arise. Should we hold on to good emotions when they arise? Should we strive to have perfect, saintly, and pleasant emotions? If you've ever been in an ancient Hindu temple, they are decorated with transcendental images of otherworldly gods, sages, and saints in prayer. The temples also sport everyday images of people grazing cattle and of mothers combing the hair of their children. Along with this, you find images of men and women in provocative postures, as well as ugly looking demons with pot bellies, protruding teeth, angry eyes, and cruel faces. Are you wondering why? These structures represent the totality of the human experience. Inner truth can only happen when you bring peaceful attention to the whole of your mind and not just the positive. Practicing inner truth is the greatest act of compassion you can show yourself. So that's what we have. Compassion for self takes us to, or our inner truth takes us to compassion for ourselves. Okay, so I think that sets us on a pretty powerful spiritual journey. And we've heard Preetaji and Krishnaji and many sages and even the Dalai Lama in his book, The Book of Joy.
The Book of Joy, yeah.
Yeah, he talks also about cleaning out the dark corners of our consciousness. And so on this spiritual journey, we really have five stages that we're moving through. Do you remember what they are, dear?
Oh my gosh, a quiz. No, a quiz.
I'm just wondering if it
let me go get my notes.
Well, the first one is one we've been talking about, is being conscious. Being conscious enough to know what state we're in, whether we're in a suffering state or a beautiful state.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of the things I liked that I wanted to touch base on that you just read too was, you know, what kind of thoughts do we want in our mind? So if we're dwelling in the negative, as you mentioned before, whatever that might be, anxiety, aggression, we could also switch that around and consciously come up with thoughts of joy, happiness.
Oh. We wouldn't get there, though, without going to our inner truth first about what stimulated
the stress,
the anger.
Okay, so that's the second state, then, becoming aware of where we're at.
Right.
Sort of right.
Well, I don't know. To me, I
must say, I don't do very good at quizzes.
I'm not giving you a quiz.
No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Well, I think that the whole idea of being conscious is that we're needing to be conscious enough to look at where the suffering comes from deep within our being. And we receive awareness when we go digging.
Yeah.
Just like in the story of Gandhi,
mm-hmm.
that once he realized and felt the shame, and then he was able to become aware of the fact that there's a lot of people suffering under the circumstances of prejudice and racial discrimination. And so that became his awareness. And he wanted to do something to change it.
And the fact that he touched on compassion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful state.
Well, it is a beautiful state. And it moves us into the third state of a transformed consciousness, transformation. He moved from his suffering once he allowed himself to suffer and then became aware of the fact that he's not alone in the suffering state, that there's a lot of people suffering in the world with this condition. And then the transformation happened because he
rewired his brain.
He felt it's the compassion.
Like reprogramming, same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
It shifts the thinking. It shifts the self-obsession. The self-obsession with self. And it becomes a much bigger perspective, which does rewire the brain. Your thinking does become better.
And then you become awakened.
Yeah.
Into a higher state of consciousness. You transcend
right.
That lower state, that lower thought form. And the next thing you know, you're rising above the Maya, an illusion
right.
of
and
your
that,
mind.
And and it's much like the story of Christina and Lee. Once it was pointed out to Christina that she was merely using her mind to understand Lee's position or her perspective, which was certainly helpful, but it really didn't take her to the core of what brought her pain up. It really didn't. It didn't change that if someone else said some hurtful words to her, that the same anger and resentment wouldn't come up again. Where once she went inside and saw what was going on and how painful that was for her and got in touch with her anger, that's when the feelings dissipate and dissolve.
Well, and the other thing I just like to bring up with that, so she was able to afford to help Lee out. And then she felt insulted by Lee when Lee made the comment about rich people. And so her act of kindness, was it coming from an ego state where, well, I'm going to help Lee out, and this makes me feel good to be able to help somebody else out. And so that when Lee made that comment, that generalization of rich people, Christina got affected by it.
You sure did.
And that was her ego that really got affected by it.
And I believe she saw that.
Yeah, because she gave from her heart originally, that act of kindness coming from the heart. I want to give in a graceful way. She might not have
been 100% there.
Yeah.
Because I know that happens for me. If I give of myself, for instance, making someone a dinner if they're sick, and I know in the past that I have felt slighted or curious, definitely curious and slighted if someone doesn't thank me for it. If they just accept it and never a thank you, and then it really does bring one back to, I'm self-obsessing. I need acknowledgement for, my ego needs an acknowledgement for doing something good.
Right. This is what I always liked about that pay it forward attitude. Because there, you're not expecting reciprocity. Am I saying that
reciprocity.
Right? Reciprocity. Rather than expecting to get something back, you're realizing that at some point in time, you probably will, you know, but you're not, that's not your goal. You're not expecting it. You don't need the acknowledgement. You're just there to serve. I can talk all day long about, the job I have is serving people and helping them out and fulfilling their dreams. And well, that's great to say it, but on the other hand, I'm trying to give myself self-acknowledgement. I'm boosting my ego rather than just doing.
Right. So even the paying forward, in a sense, has that same.
Yeah. If you're expecting something, or if you
expect someone else to pay it forward,
right,
in your kindness,
right?
When you just give out of compassion with no thought about the outcome of what you'll receive, that's a totally different experience.
Or having expectations of other people to do the same, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I think what we're doing here is some self-realization.
I think so.
Because
that's why we meditate.
because it really is important to understand what our human condition takes us through.
Yeah, it really is. It's just amazing now that you mentioned that, the realization we're having here just by discussing this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I can see in myself where the ego, you know, wants that boost constantly. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we are. We are ego, you know, and that's what we're trying to transcend away from, transform our conscious mind.
Or at least to embrace it,
mm-hmm,
so that it becomes one with the greater consciousness.
I like that. One with the greater consciousness.
Whatever that looks like.
I wouldn't know. We'd have to ask the greatest consciousness.
Or tap into it,
mm-hmm,
on a permanent basis.
Hey, maybe that's what the oneness is all about. Being one with it all.
Oh, well.
If you're one with it all, you don't need all this acknowledgement. You don't need all the ego stuff.
Yeah, hallelujah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's in the book somewhere later on.
Well, I'm wondering if we have time to do a serene meditation.
We've got about 11 minutes left.
Okay. Well, how does that sound to everyone? So.
Ooh, the switchboard is lighting up on that.
We'll sit still.
Just kidding again.
We're going to do a serene mind practice. So we're going to sit still and take three deep abdominal breaths with total attention. Feeling your chest rise on the inhale and your belly full, and slowly exhaling and feeling your chest fall and your belly shrink. Now observe your state until you discover the exact emotion you're feeling. We talked about the suffering state and the beautiful state. See if you can find an emotion. Are you feeling impatient or anxious, sad, or are you feeling calm, love, for gratitude. Now observe the direction of the flow of your thinking. Are you obsessing over the past? Or are you projecting a chaotic future? Or are you in the present moment? Now imagine that there is a tiny flame at the center of your eyebrows, or the third eye chakra, and see it move inward to the middle of your skull. Envision this flame floating in the middle of emptiness in your brain. See it flicker. Maybe golden or blue. And feel the calmness within you. And when you're ready, you can slowly open your eyes. We have time for our song, huh?
We always have time for singing. And dancing. Well, let's see. I'd like to not start out so low this week.
Okay. So shall I go higher?
No, maybe you can go lower. How about okay, I start, you start out? Okay. May the long-time sun shine upon you. All love surround you. And the pure light within you guide your way on. Now that was for self. Let's sing one for community. May the long-time sun shine upon you. All love surround you. And the pure light within you guide your way on. And now think of your family. May the long-time sun shine upon you. All love surround you, and the pure light within you guides your way on, guides your way on, guides your way on.
Which means the divine is in you.
Well, that wraps
we honor up. That yeah, divinity.
Beautiful. Well, that wraps up another session of meditation
to
self
realization.
So may you all have a beautiful night, what's left of it. A beautiful sweet day dreams. Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yep, sweet dreams.
And we will see you next. We will be with you next week.
So that we can discover a beautiful state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for joining us.